Here today I'm going to talk about mixed state quantum anomaly and multipartite separability. So I'm preparing for the March meeting next week, but there is just 10 minutes of talk and the audience is different. So this should be more understandable. And if you have any questions, please interrupt me at any time. So this talk here is based on this work, which we published in January with Meng Cheng from Yale and my advisor here at Perimeter, Chong Wang. Okay, so the content of this talk will be the following. So first, I'm going to introduce quantum anomalies in general for the usual settings they're normally used in. Then I'm going to talk about mixed state quantum anomaly, will be the main part of this talk, and then our main result for one dimension, an example of anomalous mixed state in one dimension, and then I'll conclude. Okay, so the main thing I want to stress here, I'll be stressing over and over, is that quantum anomaly roughly means quantum anomaly symmetry, remember more exact, roughly means that the symmetric states are non-trivial in some sense. And the asterisk here is just because for now I'm being purposefully vague. So bear with me, this will become clear as we go on. Okay, so our first example, first simple example of anomaly, we start with this question, which is if there exists a SO3 symmetric pure qubit state. And by that, exactly, I mean the following. So imagine you have just one qubit, which I can a state of one qubit, which is represented in the Bloch sphere, just a unit vector. And then imagine if I do any sort of rotation in SO3 group, if it still is symmetric, which means that it's still the same state. And well, of course, that's false. Cannot be any such state, because any rotation just exactly rotates the Bloch vector. So it goes to another vector, so it cannot be symmetric. But if I ask the same question for mixed qubit states, then yes, it is intuitively, geometrically, it's just the state which is at the center, well, it is its invariant in a rotation, which is a maxed mixed state, just identity over 2. And also, if I have not just one qubit, but 2 qubits, and I ask you if they are symmetric under joint SO3 rotations, then it can also have a state that is symmetric, which is, for example, the Bell state, or any maxed mixed state. It's invariant under joint if you rotate both these 2 in spin halves. And there's a connection between these 2 statements, as I said. And that's because if you trace out one of the qubits, you get a maxed mixed state for the other one, right? So, and conversely, the Bell state is just a purification of this maxed mixed state. And both of these things are symmetric under rotations of SO3. But okay, you might imagine, okay, why is that? And the reason that I want to emphasize is that the spin half representation of the SO3 group is projective. So if I have just one qubit and it's a pure state, that immediately means that it cannot be symmetric, and I'll tell a little bit why. But for 2 qubits, you can have, because half plus half is 0, 1, so these both representations are not projective. And why so? Well, a projective representation is just representation, so U of G here, G would be the element of a group, in this case SO3, that satisfies the group homomorphism law. So U of G is times U of H is just U of GH, but up to a phase. And that's the projective phase. And not only that, but it's a non-trivial projective representation if this phase cannot be removed from this equation just by redefining these U operators here by adding some phase to it. Right? And SO3 group, in particular for spin half, it has this phase. But if I had a pure state that is symmetric, that means that U of G for all G acting on one psi, let's say, is equal to psi again, well, I could just act on psi on both of these sides, and I just get like psi equals to omega psi, so the omega would just be 1, which is trivial. That goes to say that if you have this non-trivial phase, then you cannot have a pure state that is symmetric. And that is also in a manifestation of what I told you earlier, the most simplest manifestation of what I showed earlier, that the anomaly implies a non-trivial symmetric state, necessarily. In this case, anomaly just means a projective representation. In this case, just for one of these sides, for example, of this Bell state. And non-trivial, in this case, means that it's entangled, right? Because if you had a product state, here's something here times something here, then they would be individually symmetric. But then, as we just saw earlier, there cannot be any symmetric pure state. Okay, so this is just a simple example in 0 dimensions of anomaly. And I won't go into further details on this thing here, but just that I need to mention that this thing I showed you occurs at the boundary of so-called symmetry-protected topological phases of matter. And the idea here is that, well, you have these projective representations which guarantee the entanglement of these two qubits, but they can appear at the boundary state of a very long spin chain, for example. And the symmetry of all of this spin chain can be in such a way such that when you look at these low energy degrees of freedom, just at the boundaries there appears a projective representation. And if you have that, then as we showed earlier, you need to have some long range entanglement between these boundary states. There are many connections here, but I won't go to the details. But I should mention that this is connected to symmetric protective topological things and all of that. Okay, so our main focus here would be to look at these, what I showed earlier, about you cannot have these symmetric pure states, but looking in extension to beyond pure states. And wait, why is that? Why is that interesting? Well, and the first reason is because interaction with the environment is inevitable, right? Decoherence is inevitable if you have any sort of state. So we have to think about how to explain all those things going from psi to a density matrix rho. And there are many questions you might immediately ask. Well, then, okay, how does it even make sense of quantum anomaly for these mixed states? If you make sense of something like that, then how does this quantum anomaly imply something rho is non-trivial? I remember, so quantum anomaly I kind of defined as this condition that you can guarantee that your symmetric state is non-trivial. But what does it mean to be non-trivial? And also, if we can use this quantum anomaly to find new mixed states, phases of matter, or novel states that are symmetric. And to answer off to all these questions is yes, and this would be the main topic of this talk. Okay, so for the first question, so how can we make sense of anomaly for density matrices? Well, anomaly is a property of the symmetry. As we've seen earlier, for example, for SO3, it's projective representation. So how can we extend symmetry for mixed states? Well, the usual way to extend is what we'll call weak or average symmetry. It just means that if I conjugate using my symmetry representation, which I just indicated with the group element G here, if I conjugate on the mixed state, then just get the mixed state back. Right? This is just the usual way of extending from pure states to mixed states. And it's not hard to show that it's equivalent to saying that this density matrix rho is just a convex combination or a mixture of states that are symmetric. They are in the E-reps of this representation. But I'll focus actually on another more stronger in definition that is inside, that whose states are strongly symmetric inside, but also weakly symmetric. And that is defined as the following. So you only act with the symmetry representation on the left on your state rho, and then you get rho back but with a phase. So it's very similar to the definition for pure states, but then you just replace a pure state by a density matrix. And it's also not hard to show that that's equivalent to saying that the density matrix rho is a mixture of symmetric states as well, but the condition is that they have the same charge alpha, right? So that you can see that this is included in that case. And okay, so but now I want to argue that if we try to define a quantum anomaly for symmetric states using the weak symmetry, that's too weak. And this is because, well, we want to define some notion of anomaly that implies there are symmetric states are non-trivial. But if we do that, if we try to do that with for weak symmetries and weak symmetries alone, then, well, for example, the maximally mixed state is already symmetric for any symmetry group representation that you might have, just because it commutes with identity. So if you want to find something that's non-trivial, you can't, right? Because a maximally mixed state is already just featureless. So we want to go to the strong symmetry case and see if there's something interesting there. And something that we'll be using this very importantly is this property that if you have some kind of proof of property X for symmetric pure states, then you can immediately, by just having the convex version of this property, immediately have the same thing for strongly symmetric mixed states. And that's because of this equivalent representation here, that a strongly symmetric state rho is just a mixture of symmetric states with the same charge alpha. So you can immediately have a proof from pure states to mixed states. So this would be very useful because usually working with mixed states directly is very hard. Okay, so now we can define symmetry for mixed states. And another question is, okay, what does a quantum anomaly imply for mixed states to be non-trivial? And the non-triviality here that we'll talk about is based on entanglement of the state. So let me talk a little bit about this entanglement for mixed states in general. So for pure states, there's definition. is that a state is bipartite entangled or non-separable if it cannot be written as a tensor product of two other states. If you just get the convex version of that, the mixed state version of that, you say that a mixed state is entangled or non-separable if it's not the convex sum of tensor products of states, say on Alice and Bob's Hilbert spaces. And the idea here is that you can have classical correlations, but you cannot have quantum correlations between these two Hilbert spaces. And now I'll actually be wanting to generalize this to more parts, because, for example, you think about spin chains and all of that, and the definition also generalize as well, and we say that mixed state is k-partite entangled or k-partite non-separable if the same thing, but it cannot be read as a mixture of states or tensor products of all these k parties here, one a1 to ak. Okay, so checking if a pure state is bipartite entangled is relatively easy. For example, you can just compute von Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix and check if it's zero or non-zero and stuff like that. To check entanglement for entangled mixed states, that's hard, and actually can prove it's NP hard more specifically. And you have a lot of strange things occurring. For example, there are some entanglement measures that are easy to compute, but they don't say if they can have like false positives. And still measures that are very good, they are hard to compute. So this is hard. And for k-partite entanglement, it's even harder. And there are some things that happen here for if you have more than two parties that are very strange. It cannot happen if you have mixed states for two parties or pure states. And one example is the following. There are some states, and I'll show one of them afterwards, of just three qubits. They are separable under any bipartition. So if you separate these three qubits into two of them, let's say Bob, and one of them is Alice. So they are separable in this sense. They are equal to some mixture here. But they're still tripartite entangled. So you cannot have a mixture of this form and you have the three parties. And that's very strange, right? There's some exotic properties of multipartite entanglement for mixed states. For example, this cannot happen for pure states. If a pure state is separable in any bipartition, then you can immediately prove that it's all separable for all parties. Okay, so now we have all the ingredients for me to enunciate our main result for 1D, which is if you have an anomalous symmetry G, and now for pure states, but now the later we'll generalize for mixed states, if you have a pure state here that is symmetric, so the group electron psi is a phase times this same state, then we prove that the state psi cannot be tripartite entangled. It cannot be tripartite separable. So it is tripartite entangled. And regions here, the parties here, I can imagine if you have a spin chain on a priori bounding conditions. And so imagine I have many spins and I have these three regions being collections of many spins in this spin chain. And using that property that I told you earlier for strong symmetry, which I can just get something for pure states to mixed states, I immediately get that if you have a state rho here that is mixed and but strongly symmetric, I immediately have the conclusion from the pure state proof that the state cannot be tripartite entangled as well, even if it's mixed. And also, we also prove that not only the state cannot be tripartite separable, but also it is not any finite depth local channel applied to a tripartite separable state. And by finite depth local channel here, I mean something that can generate entanglement locally, but only locally on geometrically local patches. And you apply many layers, but these layers, the amount of layers, they're not scale of the system size. So in words, what we proved is that the anomaly implies, for strongly symmetric states, implies that they are long-range tripartite entanglement. That's a statement, but just to make it more concrete, I'll look at the example of the CZX model. So the CZX model is on a qubit chain with this anomalous Z2 symmetry generated by this following operator U here. So this U here would be the symmetry of this Z2 group. And it's just a part of all X, as for example, with the normal Z2 symmetry of spin flip. But it also has this part here, which in the Z basis would just be some phase factor, some funny phase factor. And as a circuit, it's just this thing here. So you first apply all the CZ operations, which entangle your state, and then apply X. So now we're considering states that are symmetric under this operation. And as you can see, this symmetry, and just to mention, this symmetry can be found at the boundary of a 2D bosonic SPT. And as you can see, this symmetry is stranger than we normally are used to. In particular, in 1D, in one dimension, anomalous symmetry roughly corresponds to the fact that the symmetries are not on site. And by on site, I mean it's not a product of symmetries, for example, this X, 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 something that occurs on all sites independently. And not only that, but it cannot not be turned into something like that if you conjugate by a local, do like a local basis transformation. And okay, now I'll just sketch the proof that if you have a state that is symmetric under this particular symmetry here, then it cannot be tripartite separable. And the proof sketches the following, is by contradiction. So assume by contradiction that you have a tripartite separable state, so A, B, and C, that is symmetric. So U acting there just gives the same state if possibly a phase, sorry. Okay, so the idea is that we want to look at how the symmetry acts on a subregion. Remember when I was talking about two qubits, I had these two qubits that if they are SO3 symmetric, then they are entangled. How do I show that? Just like if I look at just one qubit, then you have a projective presentation, then I can arrive at a contradiction. I'll do a similar thing here. So I'll restrict to region BC, and I'll use the fact that A, B, C are separable. So if you just trace out A, I have only BC on this side, and I can choose a particular Krauss operator of the left side, which I'll call UBC, such that BC is also in the symmetry of UBC. Not only that, but this UBC here is necessarily A operator that acts just like the original symmetry inside the bulk of BC, but something else can occur at the boundaries. And that something else is very important. In particular, I'm not showing all the details, of course, but it's not hard to find such UBC satisfying this property. And that satisfies that if you square it, it will be equal to ZB times ZC, where this little B, little C here are just points or like small regions. I say ZB here is region B that is close to region A. And ZC here is a operator living in the boundary of region C near region A. And this operator here will be similar, will be the 1D version of that projective phase that I told you earlier about for the 0D case. And you only have something at the boundaries here on B and C because UB acts like U in the bulk, and U squared is equal to identity. So here you need to have identity, but something can happen at the boundary. And the fact that it's exactly these operators is very important because, well, since B and C are separated, and B and ZB, ZBC is also separated in these regions B and C, then you can also have that from this equation here, that only the state B is already stabilized by this symmetry ZB, right? And the same thing happens for the state C. But that contradicts with the fact that the operator Z anti-commutes with the regional symmetry U. And that's just because Z commutes with CZ, but it anti-commutes with X. And why is that a contradiction? Well, let's look at the initial state. So initial state by assumption is symmetric under the original symmetry U. But now we have that it's also one of the parties and also the whole state is symmetric under Z. But you have two states which have, it's an eigenstate of two operators that are anti-symmetric. So this cannot happen. So it's a contradiction. And the fact that you have both of these things happening is exactly the anomaly. That's what defines anomaly for the symmetry, right? Of course, the general definition is somewhat more complicated and you have homology groups and all that, but that's the core of the definition of anomaly for one of these systems is that you have something, you restrict your symmetry to some subregion, and then you play with how the homomorphism happens and you see there's some obstruction at the boundary. And this obstruction doesn't allow you to have a separable state between these two other regions. Okay. So that was the proof for the specific symmetry. And I want to talk about a very interesting, very exotic topological mixed state that you can we can have just by looking at these results. So the state I want to talk about is the following. It's very highly mixed, and the state is just something proportional to identity plus the symmetry itself. So remember that the symmetry is the symmetry of Z2, so U squared is equal to identity. And so this guy here is just proportional to the projection into with the symmetry equal to plus one, or the projection to the symmetry equal to minus one. And in particular, you can call this an infinite temperature state, which is a mixture of all states with the same charge. And it's infinite temperature in the sense that if you have any Hamiltonian that is symmetric under this symmetry here, the CZX symmetry, and then you take temperature equals to infinity, well, no matter what is the Hamiltonian, you just get an even mixture of all possible eigenstates, right? But if on top of that, you require like, the canonical ensemble, that is, you require the symmetry to have a specific value, then you exactly get one of these states. And well, because of this property, it's strongly symmetric, and hence we can use our previous result to conclude that it's long-range tripartite entangled. But what was interesting about this state in particular is that it's tripartite entangled, it's long-range, but at the same time, it's not hard to show that it is also bipartite separable. So it is one of the examples that I showed earlier of these exotic properties that can happen just for k-partite mixed states. And not only that, but it only has global correlations in the sense that if you trace out even one qubit of this state, it's already trivial. It's because if you trace out, the trace here just gives identity, but the trace here gives zero, the partial trace. So it's very highly mixed state. You could say it's almost trivial, but because of anomaly, it still has non-trivial features. So yeah, that's basically it. So in conclusion, I showed you that point anomalies have non-trivial symmetric states. For pure states, the story goes for projective presentations for 0D, which can happen in the boundary of SPTs, and this stuff is already being studied for decades. But our contribution here was to extend this for strongly symmetric mixed states as well, where we get that the anomaly implies this long-range tripartite entanglement. And the idea of the proof is just that if it's restricting to our region B, to our region here, BC, you get two operators that guarantee that you have some entanglement between them. Some other things that I haven't told you but we do in the paper is that we can generalize this result for higher dimensions as well. But we guess something that is very, I think, just a continuation of the result. If you have on D dimensions an anomaly, just implying that your strongly symmetric states are D plus 2 partite entangled. So for example, for D equals 1, as we saw, 1 plus 2 is just, it's 3 partite entangled. And there's some caveats to that. So for generic symmetries and generic partitions, we have not proven this yet. But for special cases, it still continues the same pattern. And also, we proved something for mixed anomaly. Mixed anomaly is when, for example, you can have some part of your symmetry being weak and some part of your symmetry being strong. And only when you combine these two that you have some non-trivial thing going on. And also Lipschitz-Mathis type theorems where you combine translation symmetry as well. And well, there are many open questions. For example, I guess the main one is if there's any sort of practical measurement or practical observable that can probe this quantum anomaly for mixed states, in particular tripartite entanglement. There's a lot of work on tripartite entanglement by itself, but still, as I showed, it's a very hard problem, even if you have a quantum system like in your lab. So we are not sure like how the consequences of the anomaly can be probed in an actual system in a practical way. And there are also many other generalizations possible, higher form symmetries, fermionic systems. It'd be also interesting to see this in field theory. What you can say about that, we also don't know. This is more like just from lattice point of view and many others. So with that, I conclude. Thank you. Any questions?
So how is fermionic systems different from the spin system or the bosonic system you were considering?
Fermionics are a little bit more difficult because, I guess the main thing is that if you have two fermions that are very far away, the two fermionic operators, say C, I, C, J, they anti-commute, right, instead of commuting.
Okay.
So in this sense, their fermions are kind of non-local, so it's harder to... and. Locality here is very important, as you can see, you know, separated regions A and B, B and C. So you decide the commutes and stuff like that. People have done local lattice system fermions and doing similar stuff, but yeah, it's more complicated.
Thank you.
I don't know if this is a well-phrased question, but if I have like a completely unentangled state and it obeys some symmetry group G, and I start to entangle parts of the system, does the new symmetries that it obeys, are those subgroups of the original group G, or is it a larger group or a smaller group? I don't know if that's like a well posed.
You mean like,
Yeah, does entanglement remove generators from my original group? Like, does it break symmetries or does it?
Yeah, same question. So in principle, it can remove symmetries. Right? If you just have a state is symmetric and you start acting with unitaries, in principle, you get less symmetric state. One interesting question is, okay, now what if you act on with a symmetric unitary? Then that preserves, of course, by definition. But something is interesting about anomaly is that even if you, like, so for example, so we have this long-range tripartite entangled. So let me show the equation. So you show that this, if you have the normal symmetry and the state rho is strongly symmetric, it is not of this form, right? This channel here, this operation, as I say, that it entangles is not symmetric. And initial state doesn't have to be symmetric. Only the final state has to be symmetric. But even though all these things are not, it still cannot happen. So in this sense, it's kind of robust to even non-symmetric entanglement.
So you showed that anomaly shows itself in some bipartition entanglement, K bipartition entanglement. Do you know anything about the other side, like some K bipartition entanglement say something about anomaly?
That's a very good question. Yeah, I wish. I don't know. So you're asking like if you look at it, some kind of entanglement patterns, then if you can imply there's some anomaly there. I don't know. That would be. I think it'll be very difficult to say, but yeah, maybe there's something there.
Yeah. So in the example that you gave, you showed that it's tripartite entangles, but bipartite separable, right?
Yes.
Is that a general feature? Like if you have this, like all d less than d plus 2 part, will be actually 0? Or
No, it's not a general feature of all possible strongly symmetric states.
Mm-hmm. So it's a coincidence that it happens here. That.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, it's. Yeah, it's the feature of this being bipartite separable and the fact that if you trace out it becomes trivial is a feature of this state in particular. For example, I mean, if you can, one way to see if it's not just states, if you can just look at pure states and you have, of course, have this gapless states, which of course doesn't satisfy this. But we do think it's a generic feature of these infinite temperature states for some symmetries. So for these C2, if you have a billion symmetries, you think that also the same thing happens for this different temperature state. But that's it. Even for other symmetries like SU2, then even these infinite temperature states can be non-trivial. So, yeah.
Could you explain again why it's a long-range entanglement?
Oh, yes. So I didn't really show in this proof, so this proof would just be for tripartite separable. The idea for long-range entanglement is also using the fact that with the strong symmetry, you can basically have proofs for pure states go over to mixed states. And for pure states, for anomalous pure states, we already know they are long-range entangled. And that's work by Else and Nayak, and something that people already know. So basically, to prove that it's just a question of having some structure like this, and basically just messing with this decomposition, getting to all the pure states, improve for the pure states, and then going back and you can prove that. That's the idea. Yeah.
The periodic boundary condition used, is it necessary to construct this?
That's a good question. Yes. Yes.
So whenever I like lift the final CD that connect like head and tail, it will go, right?
Sorry, what do you mean?
So like if I just delete the last CD, like.
Yes, for example, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's very important. Actually, yeah, that's a very good question. That's the core of the proof and the core of the anomaly is that if you can imagine having open boundary conditions also the same thing as restricting an infinite system to an open chain, like a region, right? As shown here, when you do restrict, you get these boundary operators, and that's what actually matters for the anomaly. That's what get the non-trivial things. So It matters that it's priority by the conditions. And also, if you think about, you can think about these anomalous 1D systems as being the boundary of something else, so being a boundary of a 2D SPT. So the boundary of something is already closed. So yeah, also compatible.
Thanks. A related question, in higher dimension, which manifold or which geometry are we considering?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So for higher dimensions, there are many problems that could appear. In principle, like the overall geometry can be any closed manifold, but the problems appear for the partition. Also, actually, 1D, I didn't say that, but for example, you can do, you can have something like this, even in 1D. You can have your region A, instead of being all these intervals, you can have your region A being two disjoint intervals, and then B here and C here. So you see B, and these two things are A. If you have some kind of like disjoint intervals, even in 1D, you don't get the same result. That's basically because you would get like four boundary operators if you do the same thing. You get boundary operators here, 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 here. But it doesn't imply that these two guys are entangled. You can have, for example, entanglement here and here. For 2D, there are even worse things. So for 2D, you can have, imagine that this is your overall manifold, imagine it's infinite. You can have regions like this, like concentric circles, like A, B, C, D, which don't even have like intersection points. So in this way, it's more complicated.
Yeah. So you are considering a specific kind of partition?
Yes. Yeah, for 1D, for example, it's these partitions where it's just a bunch of intervals. For 3D, if you have like a partition like this, you can prove the theorem like this A, B, C, and D. For which is because it's four-partite now in 2D. So this thing we can prove. But from others, no, we cannot.
Is it on a sphere or on a torus?
Could be either.
Okay.
The overall topology, I think, doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is good. Yeah.